welcome into the Thursday edition of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ryan Porth here with you. Fellas, what's going on? Joe Rexrode, how in the world are we doing?
Doing great. Got my little alternative keyboard here.
The T works on that keyboard.
Yeah. Got to get that T fixed, man. This can't be like a storyline for weeks on the show.
It's starting to get there.
I'm sure you're getting sick of it.
No, I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I am. But anyway, I have my little side keyboard here.
There you go. Ryan Porth, how are we doing?
Doing good.
Good. Very good.
Is it a good hat today, too?
Oh, well, thank you.
Yeah. I feel like Porth's hats are always very clean.
They are.
And very, you know, well-kept.
Yeah.
Yours, not always as much.
No.
That's okay.
I just kind of throw mine around.
But sometimes that also means that these are hats that you really like a lot and wear a lot.
Which is amazing because I've got, you know, as a bald man, I've got probably upwards of 35 hats, and some have just totally fallen out of the rotation.
Yeah.
I was about to say, you only wear like four
yeah.
or five hats.
Yeah.
Yeah, you have a wider, you have a bigger repertoire, looks like.
I probably have about 50 hats.
Yeah. And he's got good hair.
Yeah, yeah. See, that's the thing. I like hats. Got a few hats. I almost never wear them because, you know, it's getting a little thin up here, and it's like, I don't want to speed up the process, you know?
It's just kind of registering to me what Rexrode said to me. Like, yeah, you kind of look run down with your hat. Porth looks great in there. Robbie, you look
I'm not saying that, but Porth's hats are like, you know, like it's whenever someone has really neat, clean hats, I feel like your hats, kind of ratty,
yeah,
are more normal. You know, like I'm used to, you know, because like all my hats are like that.
Yeah.
They all look like they've been worn a million times. But Porth is like the dude who irons his hats.
Well, this one's also like a free hat from a buddy who coaches a high school baseball team. I'm probably not supposed to have this hat, but I got it anyway.
Well, the hat that I'm wearing today is an old Predators hat from like 15 years ago that has just stayed in good condition the whole time.
Looks brand new.
It does. Like it looks like it's.
Can you tell that it's the old logo?
I can tell it's the old logo, but that's just because I know what the old logo looks like.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So, yeah. So, hey, you take care of your hats. That's good.
And Robbie does it.
Well, look, you got your favorites. You wear them out. And these jeans I'm wearing, you know, many, many days that I wear the jeans.
Look, right? That's how you know you've got a good pair of jeans, if you just keep going back to them.
Right. No nice need for khakis.
Yeah.
When's the last time you wore, like, khakis or something like that?
Oh, man, it's been... I don't know that it's been over a year, but it's been a long time. Like, there's not really been a function for me to wear khakis in a long time.
I think I did wear khakis to one of the Titans games this year.
Okay.
But that was, I felt bad about it afterward. Like, just wear jeans. It's amazing.
No one's seeing you anyway. Just going to the press box.
Well, one of my pet peeves is, for whatever reason, people who cover the NFL feel like you got to dress up for the NFL.
Like it's a red carpet show? Yeah.
Like Jason Wolf, my buddy who used to work at the Tennessean, he would go cover other stuff. He'd go cover Vanderbilt baseball, he'd help out or whatever. He'd wear like a polo, jeans, you know, fine. Goes to the Titans game on Sunday, he's in a full suit. Why? Do you think you're assistant GM?
Maybe he's getting on TV.
Well, yeah, we did video after the game, so I was in a tank top and jeans. Who cares? I was next to him in the video trying to show me up. Maybe that's what it is. I'm just bitter that he was showing me up.
But I would love to see Rexrode in a tank top.
Yeah, it wasn't quite that bad. But, you know, casual clothes. Like, why? And a lot of these people that are in the Titans press box, they get specially dressed up for the NFL game, but then not for others. So why?
That's a good question.
Ooh, it's NFL. Sunday. I mean, what is that?
It's the Titans and the Lions. Let's get dressed up.
You put on my tuxedo. It's just, it's very strange.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I don't know how the heck we got on that.
It was basically you ripping my hats, but that's okay. We'll let that go for now.
I took us there.
Yeah, you did. Philip Forsberg looked great last night. Had a little Smashville live action.
Yeah.
Matthew Olivier, Philip Forsberg, Robbie Stanley, Chris Mason. It was fun. Got to the bottom of Philip Forsberg's mustache. Really hard-hitting stuff last night. You can go check it out on thegamenashville.com.
And Olivier was having a good time.
Oh,
huh?
He was, yeah. Matthew Olivier having a great time. Talked about the 2 months that he spent in Mississippi. So from zero to 2 months.
He's a Mississippi native. He's a Mississippian.
He is. He said, so it's funny, like, he's getting credit for all that. He was basically there for 60 days.
Yeah.
So, cool.
I was about to say, not many people with the last name Olivier.
Olivier, yeah.
You know, being a true Mississippian.
Yeah.
Like, there's, like, maybe, I guess in Louisiana, a little bit of, you know, like the French.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
He said he spent more time in Oklahoma City than he did in Mississippi. So,
So another guy, so... Will he become a go-to for you?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
When life returns to normal?
Yeah, he's pretty good.
Good guy to talk to? Yeah,
nice
good.
Nice personality. Forsberg was great last night. It was awesome. Good. I hope everybody enjoyed Smashville Live last night. Brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka and Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue.
Let's have some feedback. I want to hear some feedback.
Yeah,
Text
line. Twitter. By WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. 1025, and as always, taking your tweets all day long as well, at RStanleyNHL, at Joe Rexroad on Twitter. And Joe, immediately after we got off the show yesterday, you read off some odds that were sent out about next year in the NFL and Super Bowl favorites, and it was fascinating to see where the Titans rank on that list, and quite frankly, some teams who are in front of the Tennessee Titans on that list. So, without further ado, as you look at the odds for next season and the Super Bowl, where are the Titans, and do we think that's right? Do we think that there are some teams in front of them that are just absolutely absurd in terms of their placement?
Yeah, and of course now as you say this, now I can't find it.
Well, they're 15th.
What's that?
They were 15th.
They were 15th. I can tell you that for sure. Did I delete this thing? All right, here we go. You know what I do? You do the search. And I don't even need the alternative keyboard because there's no T. I just wrote it. Here we go. So this is betonline.ag, Vegas odds. I mean, I don't know about you. So Jimmy Shapiro.
Oh, he's the guy.
Sends me something every day, man. There's odds on something every day, usually multiple things every day. So if you want to start at the top, the obvious Chiefs are 5-1. Okay, right now, that's the best odds. And then you go down the list again. Titans 15th. Now, there's some obvious ones here. You know, the Bills are high. The Packers, Bills, Packers, and Rams and Bucks are all 12-1.
Okay.
Niners kind of interesting. You know, what's interesting to me is like these teams with the quarterback situations that we don't know.
Right.
You know, that are in flux, but. So you got AFC teams that have better odds than the Titans. So you got the Bills. You got the Ravens, Browns, Dolphins at 20-1.
All right.
You got the Chargers at 22-1. You got the Patriots at 25-1. And there at 15, right in the middle of the pack, are the Titans at 28-1. A little bit surprising to me.
The New England Patriots. 25-1 odds to win the Super Bowl. I missed something.
It's just Belichick, right? Just a Belichick. People are going to bet on Belichick, right?
How'd that work out this year?
Yeah. Not great. But you know, he's driven to prove himself next year. And I guess, you know, he'll get some quarterback, people believe. I mean, the Texans are 50-1. Shouldn't the Texans be like... Let me see who's at the bottom of the list.
350-1.
I mean, you know, the longest odds here are like we're going Jets, Jags, Lions, Broncos, Bengals.
Sure,
they're all 75-1.
Right,
but shouldn't the Texans be right there too?
You would think so.
There's no reason to think Watson will play for them. They
probably won't drop the Texans until Watson's traded. When that happens, they'll join the rest of that crew that you just listed off.
I mean, that makes sense, but yeah. It's also like, if that's the case and you're waiting on other moves to happen, why in the world are the New England Patriots ahead of the Titans in this list?
Well, and how are the – I mean, look, I know the Dolphins had a nice, surprising year, but we don't know what the deal is, you know, with Tua or their situation. I mean, it almost feels like them at 20-1 is a – like they have a good chance to get Watson – line, but you know, I don't know.
Well, even the Chargers,
good defense.
I mean, Justin Herbert played really well. They've still got some problems with the Chargers. That defense wasn't very good last year, and they lost a lot of close games. I understand that, but even having the Chargers ahead of the Titans, I'm like, I don't know. Justin Herbert was very good, but there's still some holes on that team.
Yeah, they're an interesting one because I think everybody thinks they have talent. They had just brutal luck. You got the You got the young QB who looks really promising. I mean, I could see them definitely having a big turnaround and a big first-year coaching bump and all that stuff. But, yeah, you're right. The Patriots is, I don't know. I mean, they're getting some guys back on defense who opted out and stuff like that. But who's running that team? Who's running that offense?
Yeah, I mean, that's going to be the main thing to try to figure out there. And if you're the Titans, like, you look at it, 15th on the list. So, basically, I mean, right in the middle there in the NFL. And it's got to just be the defense, right? Like, if you look at this offense, even with the loss of Arthur Smith, them being down as far as they are, even after having won the division last year, it's got to just be because the defense was as bad as it's been. And obviously, we don't know exactly what the Titans are going to do on that side of the ball. But you're talking about if it's even average, the Titans are probably somewhere in the top 10.
Right. And, you know, it's if you want to talk disrespect on them, I mean, the Colts and Steelers are 33-1, which I think is also a little bit surprising. You know, the Colts, again, you don't know their quarterback, just like you don't know the Patriots quarterback, but I do know that their team is better all the way around than the Patriots.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, I don't know. I mean, look, how much goes in, how much does this, is this like, well, Chris Ballard's been really good and he'll probably find a good answer, you know? I don't know, but that's, those are interesting odds too.
You think Vegas knows something we don't, that the Patriots are on the verge of acquiring a quarterback from somebody? Maybe Deshaun Watson?
Man, imagine that. Watson Belichick, huh?
Pretty good. I don't know who in the world he'd throw the ball to right now, but it'd be pretty good.
Yeah, yeah, they'd figure it out. I don't know. Vegas does seem to know a lot more than we know. But also, you know, some of these, I mean, you're trying to get betting on both sides, obviously, with everything, with the line. But even with these, I've talked to people who follow this stuff about, you know, how things are set. And fan base matters, too, with some of these things. Like fan base, what kind of betting you're going to get on something matters. And the Patriots fan base is the type of fan base that'll lay down on that, you know?
Oh, they absolutely will. And we've seen that happen before. Big time fan. Even last year, we talked about it heading into the season. They were like, I think, number three in the AFC, just from an odd standpoint, heading into the season. And you and I both looked at each other like, are we missing something here? I mean, I guess it's Belichick, and you're waiting to see what happens there. And look, first game, looked great. Cam Newton out there just balling around and looked awesome.
Everybody's like, oh, my God, you let Belichick get Cam Newton. The NFL is toast.
It lasted about 2 weeks. Yeah. And then that was all she wrote on that front. So
the humbling of Belichick. Now it's time for the humbling of Brady.
We'll see if he bounces back. So we've laid out the odds for you. The Titans right now, 15th in terms of Super Bowl odds next year heading into the 2021 season. And we've talked about the defensive side of the ball. How much work do they have to do truly to get themselves into contender status in the AFC? Is it a lot? Is it a little? We'll discuss it when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porter with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We've got a loaded show for you today. Preds assistant coach Todd Richards joining us at 7:30. Teron Davenport at 8. Sam Mellinger, and I did confirm last night, Mellinger at 8:30. And then
you confirm with who?
Him.
Really?
Yeah.
Man, sorry. I'm gonna call him Mellinger. I don't care, but you're the one introducing him, so it's fine.
Mike Golic Jr. at 9 o'clock, and then Hal Gill at 9:30. So a loaded show. Lots to get to today here on the program. And we've laid out the Super Bowl odds for 2021. Right now the Titans at 28-1 odds per Bet Online. Is that disrespect? It's 15th in the league. Should they be higher? Should they be lower? And a lot of that, obviously, based on the defense and how bad they were a season ago. So my question to you, Joe Rex Road, how far away is this defense strictly from a personnel standpoint, leaving the Shane Bowen part of it out of it right now? How far away is this defense strictly from a personnel standpoint of being back in the mix of not even a great defense in the league, but a good enough defense in the league to compete? Is it a couple of players? Is it a lot of players? Like, how much work does John Robinson have to do this offseason?
I have no idea, and that's the hard part. And I'm sure he has a better feel for some things than we do. But the answer to that question also lies in, what's Rashawn Evans for real?
Yeah.
What's Kevin Byard? Where's he going? You know, and the cornerback, like Adoree Jackson. I would tend to look at last year and say, okay, and he came back at the end and didn't look great. But last time we saw him in a full season, I thought he was really turning into a very good cornerback. Is that who you're going to get in 2021? I mean, there's three guys that you have to count on heavily at various levels of your defense to make it a good defense. Are they, if they're what you thought, you know, when, you know, with their contracts, if they're what you thought they were going into last season, next year, okay, then I think you probably are. I think you are, you're just pass rushers away. Pass rushers slash, again, I mean, I would prioritize edge, but I'm big on another guy in the trenches. I really think that's important. And I think Daquan Jones is probably going to be elsewhere next year. So that combination, if you get that, should make a big difference. But does it then make those guys better, come back? Was last year just an – I mean, that's it's hard, you know. It's hard, and players fade. And even Vaccaro is a guy who, to me, he's a good player at a good price. But you could still make the case that, you know, you could be fine with Hooker. I mean, Malcolm Butler had a good season, making a lot of money. You could open up cap room to get one of those guys by moving on from him. You know, a lot of tough choices.
You know, I had to pull the mic fail.
Oh, look at that.
The first one. I pulled a mic fail.
Is that the first one ever? No way.
Robbie just pulled a Rex Road.
I did. I don't know if it's the first one ever, but it's on a very short list if it's not.
It's been a while.
It's been a long
time.
Feels good. I'm glad that I could do that for you. Look, I think a lot of people look at this pass rush. You have 19 sacks, and you think to yourself, I mean, this team, you're three or four players away from that standpoint of it for getting back to making yourself legitimately a threat on the defensive side of the ball. I think if you get the right couple of guys, that to me can change around in a hurry. I mean, I think back to 2018, the Packers, I think they had 44 sacks. So it was nowhere near as bad as what we just saw. You bring in Za'Darius Smith and Preston Smith, two guys in the offseason, all of a sudden your pass rush is pretty good. I mean, you feel good about your pass rush at that point. So it's not like, you know, you can't turn that around and improve that pretty dramatically with just bringing in a couple of the right guys. Like, obviously, they brought in the wrong guys last offseason. If John Robinson hits and he drafts somebody maybe in the first round that pans out and gives you seven or eight sacks, and you go sign maybe a big-time pass rusher and free agency, and you get 10, 11 sacks, all of a sudden you're feeling a lot better about that area of it. So I do think there's this perception out there that they've got so much work to do on the pass rush part of things that that's not going to turn around in one offseason, and maybe it won't, but it doesn't mean that just because you had 19 sacks last year that you're just automatically two or three offseasons away from totally fixing this problem.
No, not at all. Yeah. I mean, look, if you can dramatically plummet from 43 to 19, I think you can get back up to a reasonable number with a couple moves that you just have to make the right ones, like you said. So then it's just the question of how much money do you have? How much importance do you put on keeping these guys who are becoming free agents? And how important is it? To me, I think, look, you got to draft, but it is hard to find guys, and especially look at recent history in this league, it's hard to find guys who come right in and give you major pass rushing production. So I think that you need to pay for someone who has done it, who has proven. And I think you need to do both.
So Teron Davenport, ESPN NFL Nation Titans reporter, who, by the way, we'll have on the show today at 8 o'clock, joined Stillman and Company yesterday and talked about the pass rushing situation for the Tennessee Titans and how maybe they're closer than we realize. Here's what Teron Davenport had to say.
For you, what do the Titans have to do this offseason in order to be kind of the surprise team or be in the mix with the Buffaloes and the Kansas Cities?
Honestly, they just had to do one thing. One thing. And it's something that they've been trying to do since Kyle Vandenbosch, and that's get a consistent guy that could take a game over as a pass rusher. That's all they need. Everything else is there. Everything else is there. Could they use a shutdown corner? Yes. But you know what? A pass rush is going to help that back end. All they need is a pass rusher. That's it. And so that's why in every post, you know what, that I do about the Titans and how close they are to being a Super Bowl team, you're going to see that over and over again because that is the one thing that they need.
So that was TD yesterday on with Stillman and company. Do you buy that, Joe Rexroad, that they're one piece away from getting right into the conversation with Kansas City and Buffalo if that one piece works out and is the right piece at pass rusher?
Well, but right, but what he's talking about is how many guys like that are in the NFL?
Not many.
Like who can take over a game? I mean, that's why they get paid so much. So I agree. If you had a guy like that, it changes everything, but I don't know that on the free agent market or in the draft that guy is available to you. So to me, okay, then get 2-3 guys who at least make it better. I mean, obviously you want someone like that. And like Za'Darius Smith is a great example of someone they should have signed and a great example of someone who has come in and made a big impact. Would you consider him a guy who takes over games? He's awfully good.
At times he can, but not consistently, no. Like, I mean, he's not Khalil Mack.
Yeah. You know? I mean, who in this league is that right now?
Aaron Donald. He plays a different position.
Yeah. You know, Khalil Mack. I mean,
who? Von Miller 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Von Miller has been that guy. J.J. Watt has been that guy. T.J. Watt. It's pretty darn
good.
And obviously we saw with Watt and Dupree. That's another thing. So there's a guy, you know, Bud Dupree. Pretty interesting. Good player. ACL. What's his price? And how much of his success is because TJ Watt's over there? I don't know.
Well, but to that point, like if you bring in, say, a Shaq Barrett, who's a good pass rusher, he's not an elite guy, but he's a really good pass rusher.
He's pumping up his price.
He is pumping up his price. But let's just say for the sake of argument, you bring in a guy like that if you're the Titans. You mentioned, you know, T.J. Watt having and Bud Dupree having T.J. Watt on the other side. How much does that free up Harold Landry if you've got somebody on the other side, which, quite frankly, like he's never really had before, a true legitimate threat on the other side of him? You would think that would help him. Now, look, I don't think Harold Landry's ever going to be like a 12-sack guy, but you would think that would help him pretty immensely if you can get somebody on the other side.
Yeah, but then my next question is how often has Harold Landry doubled? I mean, I've seen it happen, but I
wouldn't imagine it's overly frequently.
Yeah, so you're still beat your blocker, Harold. No matter what's going on over here, beat your blocker.
Yeah.
You know? Now, if it's always just him and the blocker, yeah, I would think that. I mean, I've certainly seen teams shift things toward him at times, but yeah, I would think it would help him for sure. And I would think, again, you just mentioned Aaron Donald. You know, you hope Jeffrey Simmons becomes more of a force and more of what we saw early last season. But he's got to have somebody else in there to help. And I think that could really help Landry and whoever else is on the other side.
So when we come back, we will switch gears to the other side of the football for the Titans and introduce the poll question of the day. Do you, the Tennessee Titans fan, believe that the Titans can win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill at quarterback? We'll discuss it next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tomorrow, 102.5 The Game is giving away 3 pairs of tickets to the Preds versus Tampa Bay Lightning game. Just listen for the cue to call. And you could be going to see the Preds take on the Lightning at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Monday night. So make sure you're tuning in for that. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Port there with you on this Thursday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Let's introduce our poll question of the day on Twitter at 102.5 The Game. Do you think the Titans can win a Super Bowl with Ryan Tannehill as their quarterback? We're early in the voting, 110 votes are in, 66% saying yes, 34% saying no. So the nod going to yes for Ryan Tannehill so far, Joe Rexroad.
I mean, anybody who votes no, I want an explanation.
Well, the explanation is going to be, look at the Ravens game. He did not carry them when they needed him to carry him, when the running game was not going. You look at the playoffs, and as we know, we've talked about this a lot. The stats aren't great, but he played pretty well in those playoff games last year in their run to the AFC title game. But that will be the argument, is the playoffs and what the numbers look like. Fair or unfair, I'm just telling you that's what the argument will be.
Yeah, but I mean, so the question is, at any point, can Ryan Tannehill, can he win it with this team? Okay, I'll say no. You know, they weren't good enough this year. Can Ryan Tannehill on his own win a Super Bowl with a team? I mean, isn't that the question? Isn't that really the fundamental? Yeah. I mean, you can't. Come on. We're going to go through the quarterbacks who have won Super Bowls again?
I mean, we can go through the last 10 years if you want to.
Well, we can go through all time. I mean, absolutely he's good enough to win a Super Bowl. Now, will he ever be on a team that wins one? I don't know. But this idea that, well, that's just a guy you can't win a Super Bowl with, I reject it, just like the 8-year-old in the basketball court again. Spike it right to the ground.
A lot of spiking going on from you lately.
My little sister, you know, my parents used to get really mad at me because I would throw her crap all over the court. And she became a pretty good varsity basketball player. I'm just saying. I'm not taking credit for it, but I'm just saying.
Okay.
Doesn't hurt to have some stuff rejected in your face. I reject this. I'm sorry. This poll should be 100% to zero.
Well, it's not. 66% so far. So, only
so I want explanations. I mean, I hear what you're saying. Yeah, okay. He didn't play well in this particular playoff game. The stuff from last year is, you know, again, he played against Tom Brady in a game and won the game and was the better quarterback in the game, but he gets knocked for it.
Yes. Look, there is a perception around him, and we know this, that maybe he can't elevate his teammates. When Derrick Henry's not rolling, maybe Tannehill cannot elevate his team. Now, I think we've seen examples where he absolutely can elevate the team around him in the regular season. Can that happen in the playoffs? I mean, you think about, you know, Henry ran the ball okay in the AFC title game in the first half, and then wasn't very good in the second half. There wasn't a whole lot of room there. And Tannehill could not keep up. Now, granted, it's Patrick Mahomes in the Kansas City Chiefs. That's a different animal that you're dealing with. But this year in the playoffs, Derrick Henry got shut down by Baltimore, and Ryan Tannehill did not elevate and made some mistakes in the game. Now, there were coaching decisions. There were some drops in the game. There was an interception where he just totally missed in a wide-open A.J. Brown as well. So that's the thing. Can Ryan Tannehill elevate when Derrick Henry isn't going? But also, like, you can't just leave Derrick Henry out of this conversation either. That's part of Ryan Tannehill's team, and Tannehill is absolutely good enough with that offense operating at a high level to win a Super Bowl. I mean, obviously, like you said, the defense this year, I don't know if Patrick Mahomes is winning a Super Bowl with that defense this year just based on how bad they were. But Tannehill, if you give him an average defense, I think he's proven that. You know, the stretch he had when he first took over with the Titans, it's not a fluke. Like, this is what he is in this offense, and it's absolutely good enough to win a Super Bowl.
I mean, so, put Tannehill on the Chiefs. Just swap him in for Mahomes. He's not as good as Mahomes.
No.
But put him on the Chiefs. Could that team win the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
Right. I mean, and has every quarterback who has won the Super Bowl elevated their team to winning the Super Bowl? I would argue absolutely not, including Roethlisberger. You know, we talk about some of the obvious names of guys who haven't. But, again, Peyton Manning in his second win. He was there, and he wasn't really elevating anything. Right. Ben Roethlisberger, I think it was his rookie year or his second year when they beat the Seahawks. It was very early.
Second year.
Yeah. Second year.
He didn't elevate anybody. I mean, he was a caretaker quarterback.
Yeah.
You know? So That's my point, is that if we're saying, hypothetically, could Ryan Tannehill win a quarterback, it's 100% yes.
Well, I mean, really the trump card in all this is Nick Foles won a Super Bowl. Nick Foles, I mean, look, that guy, not very good. Trent Dilfer won a Super Bowl. And, like, you know, Trent Dilfer is always the example.
Well, Brad Johnson.
Yeah, but what I'm saying, like, those were 20 years ago. So those are always the examples that are used.
Yeah.
This is a different game than it was then. But Nick Foles wasn't that long ago. I mean, he won Super Bowl 3 years ago. Yeah. So,
right. You know, now, he was very good. Like, the difference between him and those guys is he was great in the game.
Right.
But, yeah.
You know one name that we don't bring up as often as we should when it comes to Trent Dilfer, Brad Johnson, Nick Foles, is Joe Flacco. The Ravens won a Super Bowl with Joe Flacco.
Elite.
Right. And again, that was, what was that team? Just like with Dilfer, I mean, that was an elite defensive team, right? They ran the ball, elite defense, okay quarterback. Ryan Tannehill's better than Joe Flacco's ever been. Am I right? I mean, like the last 2 years.
Oh, yeah.
Has Joe Flacco ever played at that level?
I would argue not.
I mean, I'll go back and look at the numbers.
You got an elite contract.
Sometimes you have a perception of a guy and it doesn't match up with what he does. It's just like people looking at Tannehill. So I should be fair here and look at, you know, Flacco year by year. But I've watched a lot of him, and I don't think he's played as well as Tannehill has played the last couple of years. And again, anybody who is a Tanna hater can point to Derrick Henry and A.J. Brown or whatever you want to point to and say, wow, why is he so much better here? But his performance is it's misunderstood still largely.
Joe Flacco's Super Bowl year, he threw 22 touchdowns and 10 picks. He had a completion percentage of less than 60%. Quarterback rating of 87.7.
And got that contract.
Hey, good for him.
So I'm looking at his best year. I mean, he's had a couple. He had three straight years where he almost hit 4,000 yards. I guess his best year would have been 27 TDs, 12 picks in 2014.
Now, he was unconscious in the playoffs, 11 touchdowns, 0 picks for the Ravens in 2012. But the regular season numbers do not pop out.
Yeah. That's a good example. And you're right. That's not one of the names that it should. It should come up more, but it doesn't. So I want explanations.
Well, you've been an Eli Manning hater. Is Tannehill better than Eli? Like, is this the version we've seen the last year and a half of Ryan Tannehill, is that better than Eli Manning?
I think so. That's a good question, though. And you know what? Eli is actually a great example of, here's what I think of the guy. I see quite a bit of him. I don't watch him play after play. And Eli, very good player. And certainly elevated himself in those moments, right? I mean,
sure.
So you can't take away the two Super Bowls and what he did and made some big-time plays. Had some help, too, with some amazing catches. So I'm looking through Eli here. My goodness. I mean, even right in the prime of his career, he's got a 20-pick year, a 25-pick year, a 27-pick year.
Oh, Eli turned the ball over quite a bit.
Boy.
Kind of like Dan Fouts.
Well, so what was Fouts' number? It was like
241, I think.
Yeah, Eli 244.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, and obviously he had some big years. I mean, he had
Dan Fouts ahead of Eli on the list. There you go.
I mean, I'm certainly that was never in question. I would never would have brought up Eli Manning, but it's a good name to bring up because, I mean, the guy did throw for 57,000 freaking yards.
Yeah.
He had a 4,900. You know, he had a couple 4,400s. So, I mean, he's had big production. I mean, his 2010, 31 touchdowns. Oh, and 25 picks. It's amazing. I mean, like
a little bit of Jameis to him. 25 picks is a lot. A
little bit. I mean, in 15, he's at 35-14. That's good. But I didn't realize that. I didn't realize Eli was such a turnover machine.
Oh, yeah, man.
So, yeah, I'll take Tannehill. I'm sorry. I'll be a Tanna homer all day.
Eli could get in the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
Eli's touchdown interception ratio are like Titans scores from this past year. 35-21.
Ooh. Oh, there we go.
Look at Ryan Porth. Way to go.
By the way, Dan Fouts tomorrow.
Yeah, we'll have Dan Fouts on the show tomorrow. So looking forward to that conversation very much.
The GOAT, Dan Fouts.
Yeah, buddy. Coming on the show tomorrow.
Finally.
Let's get his thoughts on that.
We can talk about the real greatest quarterback of all time.
That's right. Bart Scott joined Stillman & Company yesterday and talked about the Titans as a Super Bowl contender and how Ryan Tannehill fits into the mix. Here's what Bart Scott had to say.
I mean, I think they're right there. I mean, listen. Tennessee's going to always be a tough out. Whenever you have that type of – that brand of football and that physicality, you know, I think one of the teams that were happy that they didn't have to face him is a team like Kansas City, because of the physicality makes you to make business decisions. When you got that big man, you know, running downhill at you on the fourth quarter, and I guess easy to stop him in the first, second quarter, you're fresh and you don't have, you know, you don't have any of those conclusions, or you're not hurting. You don't have that ringing headache from trying to bring him down. And the shoulder's not hurt because he needs you in the shoulder, or, you know, got your clavicle hurting. But, you know, it's one of those things where style makes fights. It's like, you know, the Ravens was a good, perfect matchup for the Titans because they're both two physically tough teams that really run the ball. When you think about a team that who gave, you know, Kansas City hard time this year, you think about the Raiders, they were able to get up in their face, disrupt them, but also on the other side, they were able to open it up and throw the ball down the field. I think that's the next evolution for Ryan Tannehill, being able to say, you know what, we're just going to drop back seven-step drops. It's not going to be off play action. And I'm going to make plays down the field without having to turn my back to the defense. I want to drop back, read the rotation of the safety, and make plays downfield. And it's going to be up to guys like Brown, you know, to make sure that he can win those 50-50 balls. And, you know, Corey Davis as well, make sure that they continue to elevate and take the next step.
Do we think that at times people just make too much of Ryan Tannehill and the play-action pass? Like, it's not like Ryan Tannehill's never dropped back in this offense and just thrown it down the field.
There's advanced stats, too, that have, which if I was good at the internet, I'd find quickly here. But there, I've seen them that have actually refuted this idea that he's overly reliant on play action. So, yes. To answer your question, yes. Anybody who's voted in this poll as a no, you need to leave an explanation today, please. People are mad that we're doing the poll, too, by the way.
You know, people get mad about everything. That's
yeah.
Fine.
Let's get mad about everything, Uncle Ricky.
When we come back, we will continue this conversation with Ryan Tannehill. How is the change at offensive coordinator going to affect him? We'll discuss it when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, taking you through this Thursday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee, discussing Ryan Tannehill and this Titans offense. Is Tannehill good enough to win a Super Bowl? Both Joe Rexroad and I say absolutely yes, Ryan Tannehill is good enough to win a Super Bowl. So far, only 66% of people agree with us on the poll. So we'll monitor that poll question all day. Joe Rexroad, highly upset that it's not at 100%.
It doesn't make sense.
I'd say if there's a drop-off from Arthur Smith to Todd Downing, I would be right in the middle. The Ryan Tannehill that we saw with Arthur Smith, I would vote yes.
Okay, but you're now talking about a different question. You're saying, you know, will he win it with this team or whatever? I mean, to me, I look at this question as Ryan Tannehill as a quarterback, is he good enough to win a Super Bowl? That doesn't have anything to do with these external factors you're talking about.
Okay, all right.
Am I wrong?
No, you're right.
What are we talking about here?
I mean, will he is a different question.
Yeah.
I think will he, the chances are much more likely than no, he won't.
Absolutely.
That's just the chances in the NFL in general.
Exactly. This is he good enough? I'm not worried about all that stuff. And again, that answer is 100 yes and 0 no. Sorry. If you answered no, you got the wrong answer.
You are wrong.
Wrong.
Do you expect that there just be a seamless transition from Arthur Smith to Todd Downing? I mean, you've made this move in large part for continuity, and we all know how good Arthur Smith was, especially for his game day feel. I mean, he had some great calls, and obviously, I mean, you've got some weapons in Henry and Brown and Ryan Tannehill that you feel great about. But the feel of it, I think Arthur Smith was a master at. I'm very interested to see what Todd Downing looks like in that part of it. But I think overall, I mean, and there are still questions. Obviously, we don't know. Jonnu Smith, what is he going to be here? Corey Davis, is he going to be here? Do you add more pieces to the receiver room? Feel like probably going to need to at some point, whether it's in the draft or in free agency. What does that look like? So there are still some unanswered questions that factor into this discussion. But a large reason this move was made, we would assume, is because of continuity and how good the offense has been. Should that be a relatively seamless transition for Ryan Tannehill in this process?
I think for Tannehill, I think so. He's still got his QB coach. Pat O'Hara is still here. You know, basically everybody else still here. You move, you know, you have to replace the spot vacated by Arthur Smith. You move up Todd Downing. I think for Tannehill it will be seamless, but like you said, that's the question. Having gone through every play of the Oakland Raiders in 2017, I can tell you that Todd Downing had a little bit of trouble on third and medium at times. He got a little bit mucked up. I'm kidding. I haven't done that yet. I'm waiting for somebody to do that. I need to see if I can talk our guy Ted Gwynn at The Athletic into watching every.
You need to watch every snap.
Like, Ted, are you busy, man? Can you do that for me? Can you go back and watch that? Or we could just go with Fitz.
Yeah, just
like Todd Downing is never going to make a good call this year on the field. But that's a huge question, and you know how it is with offensive coordinator. You know, with Shane Bowen and DC, you look at results. And, you know, you can look at, like, whatever, blitzes that don't work or you get caught on a screen or whatever. Bottom line is you look at results. But with offensive coordinator, I mean, that's – in all of sports, tell me a coaching job where every single thing you do is immediately known and evaluated. And there's really nothing like offensive coordinator, you know, in football. And it's why it's the most ripped job in football, I think more than the head coach, because anytime an offense, this OC sucks, a play doesn't work, what's he doing? Running too much, passing too much. Believe me, I'm a big part of the second guessing crew, you know. But it's like you said, you could just see with Arthur Smith. Of course, there were times that it was like, boy, maybe you should have run Derrick Henry in the playoff game against the Ravens one time in there to get 2 yards. Right? It's not like he was perfect, but his feel for things. And you could see things as they unfold in a game, setting up a play for later in the game with something that looks similar, everything looking the same. I think a lot of that stuff will be right on exactly, like the motions checks, things looking the same. But you still have to have that feel, which Mike Vrabel didn't know Arthur Smith had before he gave him that job. He liked like everything else about him. And we'll see with Todd Downing. But as far as the Tannehill aspect of it, I mean, if Tannehill's unhappy with some of the play calls, he can also check in.
Yes, he can
too. By the way, but I think it will be seamless. I think they'll work well together, and they should be in good shape.
Now, the expectations for this offense heading into next season, they're going to be pretty high. I mean, Arthur Smith has set the bar quite high, and quite frankly, I mean the bar is set at a level where. I'm not going to say it's unrealistic that they can meet it, because I think it is realistic. They could get back to that same level. But even if you have a slight drop-off offensively, you're still going to be a pretty good offense. I just wonder if that happens, do Titans fans look at it as, missed our chance with that offense we had last year with how bad the defense was, or is that just kind of inevitable that maybe the offense isn't quite – I mean, think about it. You had – basically, 2 1,000-yard receivers, a 4,000-yard quarterback, and a 2,000-yard rusher. That's pretty incredible to think about.
And 30 points a game.
That's a high bar.
Oh, yeah. No, it's high. Well, and here's the thing. If you tell me that they're going to bring back Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, and then, of course, let's remember, Taylor Lewan is coming back, and I think it certainly hurt the offense when he left. If you have all that together – there's no excuse to take any step back. Now, we don't know if all those things are going to happen. And the more I think about it, I've gone back and forth. I think I'd change my answer. I think I would prioritize Davis over Smith. But it's close. It's so close. You got to try to have both of them. Now, if somebody out there wants to pay Davis $13, $14 million, I don't think you can do it.
But I don't think so either, but I will say, I mean, there's chatter right now that maybe the salary cap is going to end up being a little bit higher than we thought it might be heading into it, and I wonder if that's the case, how much that factors into this as well for the Titans, knowing that you still have to go get help on defense.
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. It's going to be really interesting because there's just so many different moving parts that can affect, you know, the domino thing here on defense and offense. But if you have all those guys back, I mean, you've got to think that this should pick right up. I mean, I'm not expecting Derrick Henry to have 2,000 yards again next year, but I do expect him to have 1,500, and that's fine. You can score 30 points a game with Derrick Henry having 1,500 yards.
Sure.
I do wonder about the slot. Adam Humphries and his future – making what he makes, and I mean, I don't know from his perspective, what's his future, and that's an important thing, an important spot to address. They don't really have anybody. I mean, again, like Anthony Firkser, there's a guy who should make some more money.
Yeah,
He's an important, you know, piece in what they do, but they've got to have – they really do need to devote resources there, too, regardless of Davis.
So, Joe, on the other side of the ball, Jim Wyatt yesterday of TennesseeTitans.com came out with a piece, and obviously there's been a lot of conversation around Shane Bowen being hired as the defensive coordinator, and Jim Wyatt caught up with Kevin Byard, and an interesting quote from Kevin Byard says, quote, "At the end of the day, I think Shane is a good coach. I think it's kind of unfair for a guy to get a promotion to a new job and everybody just pounds on him as if he's a bad coach. I really do think he's a great coach. And I think if you look at the situation for us this past year as it relates to our defensive performance, I'm real big on accountability. I'm not going to be one of those guys because I didn't have my best year statistically to say, hey, it's the defensive coordinator's fault or it's because of this or that. I'm always going to look at myself first." So what do you think of those comments there from Kevin Byard as it relates to Shane Bowen being the defensive coordinator?
I'm shocked he didn't rip Shane Bowen.
Like, me too.
What is this hire, Vrabel? What are we doing? You know? Yeah, the accountability thing's interesting. I mean, and we had Kevin Byard on and asked him, and he got asked so many times this year. And he kind of went to that, you know, statistically, it's not like – I don't think everybody was asking him about, like, not having picks. Obviously, you want to have picks, but that's not what it's all about. It's just – like
make a tackle.
Tackles and things like that, you know, and just missing tackles and then not getting beat. Like he seemed to just be a half step late in a lot of plays where I think before he was there. But I do expect him to be accountable and be a leader for this team. And as far as the vote of confidence for Shane Bowen, I mean, that's 100% expected. I don't expect anybody to be asked about Shane Bowen on this defense and say, I just don't like it. Yeah,
that's not going to happen. Look, I think we know that. The more interesting question to me is, what Kevin Byard did we see last season? Was it because of Shane Bowen and the defense or maybe the play in front of him? Or is he regressing as a player? Because if he's regressing as a player, that's a gigantic concern if you're the Titans. I'm not willing to go there yet. I'm not willing to say that he's absolutely regressing as a player. I think it's obvious he did not have the same season as we've grown accustomed to seeing from Kevin Byard. But to me, that's the more interesting question. Was it more on what was in front of him? Was it more on the coordinator position? Or is Kevin Byard regressing as a player? I think the latter option is the least likely.
Yeah, but see, this is where – like, this is where my outrage on Bowen, I think, is less than a lot of people in Nashville. Because if your coverage has you in a position, you know, like you're picking up the tight end on this play or whatever it is, and he just gets beat or he's a little bit late or here's a running play and now you either take a good angle or a bad angle, I'm all for putting stuff on the coaches, but how is that on the coaches? Some of these plays, I can't sit here and say, God, Dean Pease wouldn't have let him miss that tackle, you know? Now, does that – and then your other – so I'm eliminating that. Now, then your other two, I don't know. I mean, I think probably at times he got out of position because other people weren't doing their jobs, things like that. Is he regressing? I don't know. I mean, it does happen.
You know, but he's 27.
Yeah,
like, it's not like he's a 33-year-old man.
Right, right. No, I mean, yeah, I agree. I would think it's a lot to do with being on the first bad defense of his career. Not to take anything off his plate because he's a part of that defense and he's supposed to be one of the best players and he's supposed to be the leader. But for the first time in his career, he played on a bad defense. He was on a decent to good defense every other year of his career. I would say even maybe a little bit better than decent. Pretty good. Pretty good to very good defenses. Is that fair? Is that the right range?
I would say so.
And then bad.
And very bad.
So how could that not have an effect? But like at the same time, in 2021, he's a guy you want. He's got to elevate. We're talking about elevating teams. I mean, Byard's got to elevate next year.
When we come back, let's take a look at this Titans division right now and how lucky they've been with a couple of moves in particular that already have happened and one that may happen here in the not-so-distant future. How much does that extend the window for the Tennessee Titans? That's coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, live from the Wholesale Link Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.